This episode is made possible by the generosity of our listeners. Thank you.
Welcome to the Creation Science
for Kids
show. What kind of people most need wisdom? And what happens to people who focus on finding it? Let's explore Proverbs to uncover the answers. Then, have you ever watched a nature show that amazed you right until it got annoying because they said it all happened because of evolution in millions of years? There's a new animal movie coming out that openly honors the real designer of these incredible creatures, and we're going to tell you about it. And to wrap things up, we're going to look at an amazing creature ourselves, the sea turtle. Praise the Lord. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart, in the company of the upright, in the congregation. Great are the works of the Lord, studied by all who delight in them. Full of splendor and majesty is his work, and his righteousness endures forever. He has caused his wondrous works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and merciful. Psalm 111, verses 1 through 4. This is episode 72 of the podcast, where we learn about Jesus, our Creator, and his amazing world. Hi. I'm Sherry Fields, your host, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Joseph.
Hi.
And Stephen.
Hi.
To follow along with what we're looking at, check out the show notes, creationscience4kids.com/sea turtles. And be sure to listen to the end for the punny science joke of the day. Okay, so we're back in Proverbs 8. We're getting closer to where it talks about wisdom and creation directly, but there's so much to cover here that we started quite a bit earlier. We have worked our way up to verses 15 through 17. Would you read them for us, please, Joseph?
By me, kings reign, and princes decree justice. By me, princes rule, and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me.
All right, so in past episodes where we've covered earlier in Proverbs 8, it talks about what wisdom, God's kind of wisdom, involves. And one of the big things was back in verse 13. Would you read that again for us, please, Stephen?
The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy and the evil way, and the froward mouth do I hate.
Okay, so God's kind of wisdom, how would you describe it to somebody who hadn't really thought about wisdom before? Joseph?
It's like what to do with your knowledge.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, what to do, how to make it practical. So you see here that a big part of it is to recognize that God is to be feared. He is the one who created things. He's the one who set up the rules, and he gets to enforce them. Anything evil he doesn't like, and then putting yourself in his place, which is what all pride, arrogancy, Stephen, is just a fancy word for pride, saying, I'm super important, much more so than what you actually are. And then froward, remember that means twisted, perverted mouth. Anything twisted, putting ourselves higher than we actually are, God doesn't like, and wisdom is recognizing this reality. So, who was it that it says in the beginning of our passage needs to be especially aware of wisdom and how to see ourselves in the world from God's perspective?
Kings reign and princes.
And, yep, and nobles and even all the
judges
of the earth. What kind of people are those? Kings, princes, nobles, and judges?
They're important people.
Why?
Because they're in the higher family.
Well, not exactly. Everybody's from one human family. But their role in life, they have more what, would we say? A king has lots of
power.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Power. They can make things very good or very bad for the people under their authority. So wisdom is saying, this is what it takes. In this case, it's not saying all kings always rule by wisdom. Otherwise, there would never be any dictators. There would have never been anybody like Hitler. No one would have ever suffered. So obviously, this is talking about good kings, good princes. The ones who are doing their jobs use wisdom. So by the way, you guys are both boys. You may possibly become a judge, although I don't see that being in your temperament, that law is something that you were designed to do, or even necessarily a politician, although that's possible. Because we don't have kings and princes in America, but we do have politicians and we have judges, and they hold a lot of power, particularly the people in the Supreme Court. They are the ones that said, you may not read the Bible as a public school. You may not pray as a public school. They are the ones who've said it's fine to kill people who haven't been born yet. The judges in our country have a lot of power, and they will stand before God for whether they used God's wisdom or if they went their own way. But since you are guys, you will, no matter what, have a certain amount of authority. What kind of position does God put men in often? What might you grow up to be?
A scientist?
Yeah. But what would give you authority?
A dad.
A dad, yeah. Even I, as a mom, so all you girls out there, when you get married and have children, you have the power to make your children under you miserable or blessed. And men, even more so, when you're a husband and a father, you can set the tone of your household. You are the one who determines whether the people under you are going to suffer or whether you are going to train them up in God's nurture and admonition. So this is something for all of us to be aware of. Just like Solomon, if you remember, when he first became king and was honoring God, and God said, because I'm so pleased with what you're doing and how you've come to me, I will give you whatever you want. And do you remember what he asked for?
No.
He wanted wisdom.
Right. And God honored him. He said, you could have asked for riches or to conquer all your enemies or to live a long, long life. And instead you asked for wisdom so you could be a good king. And because of that, I am so pleased with that answer. I will give you what you asked for and these other things you didn't ask for as well. So that's part of why it's very appropriate that this is Proverbs 8, which was written by Solomon. He's pointing out, if you want to be a good king, you need to have wisdom. And if you recall, although Solomon became very famous across a huge portion of the world for his wealth, he was so wise that instead of coming to conquer and steal his wealth, kings would come and bring presents just so they could talk to him and get some of that wisdom for themselves, like the Queen of Sheba did. And they left him alone, and he was the richest king ever, really, of any kingdom, ever, anywhere, because people honored and respected his wisdom. So this is something, as you grow up, as you're preparing to be the men and women that God called you to, whatever place of influence and power and authority you are given, remember that wisdom is something you very much need. Now, I particularly wanted to talk about this last part, the last verse, because this is something we will mention sometimes when we're talking about people who follow Satan and his ways. When Satan has used a person or a group of people to accomplish his evil purposes, do they end up having a happy end of their life and all is peace and joy with them?
No.
No, they tend to die miserably, that they are miserable and they do not live long. Like, again, think of Hitler. Think of most any of the people. Even if they live a long time, they are not happy. But what about those who love wisdom, which is to honor God so much you are willing to think God's thoughts after him? How does wisdom and God, through wisdom, treat those who care about wisdom?
Love him.
Mm-hmm. So if you love somebody biblically, and this is the Bible, are you just thinking warm, fuzzy things about them and posting your picture on the wall and never saying anything?
No.
If you love somebody, you will?
Take care of them.
Exactly. That's the point. Very good. Yes. So wisdom, when you love wisdom and you want it and you want to think God's thoughts and you want to do things his way, rather than just what's easy and makes you happy right now because you want it, it will love you in return. There are all kinds of proverbs that talk about those who have wise words will eat of the good of them and they will have life and long days. Lots and lots of verses about that. But I rather like this short phrase, I love them that love me. It says it all in 6 words. And then you have those that seek me early shall find me. What do you think it means to seek wisdom early, Stephen? There are 2 things. Early has to do with time. We talk about getting up early.
the morning.
Right. And you can also seek it early in your whole life. What do we call the early part of somebody's life?
A kid.
Yeah, when you're a kid. So, all you kids listening, seek wisdom early and you will find it. That's a promise from God. So, if we're seeking Him early when we're kids, what does it look like if you're seeking for something? If you're playing hide and seek, what are you doing if you're not the one hiding, if you're the one seeking?
You're looking for the other people.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean you sit down on the stairs and you lean over to the left and the right and you say, well, I don't see them, so I guess I'll quit?
No.
No, what do you do?
You look all around for them.
Mm-hmm. So you walk around and you bend over and you move the curtains. Yeah, you do whatever it takes until you found them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's something it's pointing out here. Wisdom isn't always just dropped in your lap where you say, oh, now I've got wisdom. Easy. No. It is work. It does take time. You can't be spending all your time just playing and having fun and expect to be a wise person. You've got to pay attention. Where's the best place to find wisdom?
In the Bible.
Absolutely. And you can watch for wise people. Lord willing, your mother and your father are wise people. Your pastor is certainly a wise person. The people teaching Sunday school, all kinds of. So you want to seek out wise people around you who have learned before. But you've got to engage your mind for you to catch wisdom. But if you do, if you say, God, I want this, please help me. James chapter 1 says, if you ask God for wisdom, He will give it. And He gives lots of it and He doesn't tell you off because you didn't ask earlier. So God wants you to find wisdom and it will make a difference in your life and in the lives of the people as you get older that you have power and influence with. All right, now we get to talk about something really, really cool. I had been wondering what I could put in the middle section of this podcast because there are so many resources out there that for the most part, I've been mentioning other creationists rather than going out and just finding science news like I thought I would need to. But it's worked out really well to be able to share what we're learning about creation science and what websites we like. And I had run into on Facebook and stuff that people were getting excited. Even Ken Ham with Answers in Genesis was mentioning this new documentary film that was coming out, The Riot and the Dance. And I was thinking, riot, dance? That's not something that sounds like I should have anywhere near my boys because they're already wild and crazy enough. So I didn't really check into it. But as it's getting closer, more people are saying, oh, this is amazing and it's about animals. It's like, oh, really? So I decided to go check it out and realized that although it's got an odd name, it really is like one of the BBC or PBS or National Geographic, a nature documentary done by a creationist. It's like, now that sounds cool. And then I checked my calendar for the day it's coming out, which is March 19th. If you're listening to it, to this podcast right after it's released, you have until the 19th, which is a Monday night. It will be in theaters, but I had something already scheduled, so I couldn't go. So I thought, why don't I try emailing them, see if they have a way that I could watch it online as a reviewer and let my audience know what I thought. They got right back to me and said, yeah, I think we can make this work. So this afternoon, we got to sit in our living room on a small screen because it had to be on my computer, and we got to watch it. What did you boys think of The Riot and the Dance?
It was awesome.
I liked it.
Yeah, it was very well done. Even we had to keep moving the two-year-old out of the way because every time there was a new animal, he wanted to get his head right in the middle of the screen and mess around with the laptop because he just found it fascinating pretty much regularly all the way through. So that was kind of frustrating for us, but it tells you something about how interesting this is for small people. I don't think that getting bored will be a problem with anybody watching this film. There was something that could be a concern for some people. What? Gordon Wilson was the narrator, and it was showing his journey to go see these animals. What was it that he especially liked seeing and touching?
Snake.
Yeah. So if you have somebody who just finds snakes horribly creepy or tends to get nightmares, this is showing in the evening, and there were a lot of snakes in this movie. So that was one caution. Other than that, for showing things like carnivores eating on a carcass, it wasn't nearly as graphic as I've seen in other nature documentaries. So they did a really good job on making things more gentle, but there were lots of snakes. So what stood out to you the most, Joseph, if you were telling somebody who was thinking of going seeing it?
Lizards and snakes.
So it's great for if you want to see lizards. I really liked, what do they do with the lizards? He would
Catch them.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd show them to you.
Right. And he obviously really liked them because he would show, like, they've got this gorgeous turquoise color on their scales, and it looks like leaves, and showing all the fine scale work around their eyes. It was really rather lovely and a lot less uncomfortable because he obviously enjoyed them so much. What stood out to you a lot, Stephen?
That thing that looked like a snail, but it had feet.
It mostly focused in on one animal at a time, so it only covered a few main animals that we got more in depth. But they kept having these montages of nature photography that just that they'd been able to capture. And there's one point where we didn't know what it was, and it only showed for about 4 seconds. But it was something beautiful, iridescent, and we were having trouble telling if it was some sort of insect or almost like a weird little turtle, but it was very small, like the size of a bug. So it had lots of little snapshots of different creatures. Where was it filmed? Did you catch the basic locations where he was?
No. California and Africa.
Not Africa. He actually didn't go to Africa, because that's where I was saying it can't be a cheetah, because they're not in Africa. They're in Asia. He was in Sri Lanka. So it was actually only a few locations. He's from the Pacific Northwest, so it had some of that.
India.
Yeah, it was Sri Lanka, which is right off the coast. So it's almost exactly like India, just slightly different animals and stuff there. And then all the way down into Mexico, into a desert there, some in Arizona, and then, yeah, over to Sri Lanka. So it was a little more limited, but in a way, I didn't mind because that allowed them to spend more time on the individual animals. The footage was beautiful. Watching it, the way they edited it, it was beautiful. The music, some of it was almost, I wish they had had a full, what do you call it, soundtrack done for them. But I didn't find that it detracted. I'm just a musician, so that's something picky that I notice. What about what he was talking about? Do you remember anything that he said?
No.
Did he talk about evolution?
A tiny bit.
Yeah, what'd he say?
I forgot.
Yeah, he did. Okay. So I loved how they opened it. And in fact, all throughout it, he was singing my song. It was one big idea of God as a creator. He invested in this. He designed these. Did you catch him? Over and over, he would say, who would have invented this?
Yep.
Yeah. So he was all the time bringing us back to God came up with this. In fact, fairly near the end, when he was going to get into all the poisonous snakes and talking to all of us who just wish they were off the planet and far away from us, he was pointing out that just because we don't think something is beautiful doesn't mean the creator doesn't. And that's something to remember, both when we're looking at the animal world, but also to remember about human beings. I thought he did an incredibly good job at the big picture. What does it mean to really appreciate nature as it's meant? He did a really good job. He would compare nature to both Eden and what else? Do you remember when he was talking about the bad and scary stuff, like with the elephant seals? What did he remind us of that a lot of people don't tend to want to point out? Is everything the way God originally intended it to be?
No.
Yeah, so what's happened to change it?
The fall.
Right. He, in several different places, so you would definitely get the message if you were paying attention at all, that the world is broken and suffering and hurting. But he kept switching. It never got too depressing. And he certainly wasn't doing anything like, oh, people are just, if we don't change our ways, everything's going to be gone, which is almost like you have to include it for anything that the secular world puts out. So that was very refreshing. Nothing about climate change at all. He did point out that the world is going to get way better. And he had some interesting points to say about how we relate to snakes in particular. This is great. The little kids are going to really enjoy it. And anybody who's old enough to start thinking about the ideas presented them very, very clearly. Now, the last minute after the credits are the American West and Sri Lanka the only place he's going?
No.
Where was he?
He was in the water.
Right. They're already planning another documentary about sea creatures. Now, I did see that the guy who's putting it together has had a brain tumor, but apparently he wants to keep doing this, so I am very much looking forward to that. Hopefully, my kids and I can go. I don't mind paying the tickets to go see it on the big screen because I think it would just be incredible, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'd probably find a babysitter for the little guy so that he couldn't be sticking his head in our way. But it's absolutely worth it. Unless you've got somebody terrified of snakes, go and see it. And it's one of the best films to entertain kids and get across. There were some points where it just was him with like a black background. It was just him with lighting.
Yeah.
But never for very long. Did you find it was like, would you just get on to showing us animals? Or was it just...
No, I liked it. It just reminded me of the creation movie that we watched.
Yeah, it had a little bit more towards the beginning, but never for very long, where it was just a talking heads. And it was more you were getting to know him as a biologist and stuff. So I found that it never got to where the pacing slowed down too much to entertain kids. So I highly recommend going to see The Riot and the Dance. I'll have a link to it. I would imagine if your theater had showed the ones that is Genesis History and the Genesis movie 3D, that they'll probably have this one as well. March 19th is the day it's in theaters. I'm sure it will be available at some point down the road for us to watch at home on our smaller screens. But there's something very cool about going to a movie theater.
It's really big.
What is?
The movie theater screen.
Right, yeah. So it would have been nice. But like I said, I had something scheduled, so we weren't able to make it anyway. So this worked out beautifully. It's really, really nice to see Christians and even outspoken young earth, we absolutely reject evolution creationists, doing such a phenomenal job. This has been an exciting year, and I'm looking forward to more in the future as these kinds of movies set the bar and help us as we move forward. So this is definitely quality enough and well put together to go and see as a family. All right, now it's time to hear from you. What do you have for us today, Joseph?
Sea turtles. Sea turtles are amazing creatures that God made for us to look at and enjoy. There are 7 existing types of turtles.
Okay, and existing means that they
live and they're not like extinct.
Right, that there used to be more types. Uh-huh.
And they are the green turtles, loggerheads, Kemp's Ridley, an olive Ridley, hawksbill, flatback, and leatherback.
Hmm.
And they can be found in every single ocean except for the polar regions, where it's too cold for them too.
Yeah, that makes sense, because they're cold-blooded like other reptiles, so it's hard for a reptile to do well where it's really cold.
And they're mostly found in something called continental shelves.
Uh-huh.
Which are underwater land masses.
Right. So do you know much about it? Because that's getting into geology. Do you know? Okay. So if you have a globe, there are some globes that show the ocean depth in different colors. You've got some areas where the edge, like off the Andes down in South America, you've got mountains way up high, and it comes down pretty steeply where you have very little space for beaches along the shore, and then it continues steep, steep, steep down under the water. But that's not normal. Normally you have like off the coast of Florida and stuff where it's gets very gradually shallower. The coolest place is off where Indonesia, between mainland Asia and Australia, it never gets very deep. That's why we believe when the ocean levels were lower during the Ice Age that you could have hopped kangaroos could have hopped from mainland Asia out to Australia, and then they were trapped as the water rose. Mm-hmm. That's very common. Most continents have what's called a shelf, where it's fairly shallow. That's where you have, like, the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah, and reefs.
Yes. I used to wonder what it would be like to have those bridges out to the Florida Keys. Well, one time I did get to drive there with my family, and it wasn't nearly as exciting as I thought it would be, because I figured it would have to be huge, massive bridges like the Golden Gate Bridge or something. But no, the water was only like 9 feet deep. And so it was just ordinary bridges that kept going. And then you would land on an island and drive along the ground for a bit. And then you were up above the 9 foot deep water and then back. So that's continental shelf that would had islands every once in a while. That's the way the continental shelves are. And I think that's to, like, I don't know, somewhere around 600 feet deep is what is considered shelf. And then it tends to drop off like a cliff.
Okay. Like, yeah. Drop off.
Yeah. So they've got large areas of the world where they can hang out. And what would be the advantage? Does it say, did you learn why they like the continental shelves?
No.
Okay. So if you think about it, I already mentioned the Great Barrier Reef. What would be nice about that kind of a situation where the water's not that deep?
They can catch food easily.
Right. Yeah. Did you learn what they eat?
Yeah, they eat. They're different ones. Like, the loggerhead, Kemp's
Ridley,
and the olive Ridley and the hogsbill. They eat both meat and plants.
Right. Go ahead and say what that. What do you call it?
Which means that they're omnivores.
Right. Like humans, we're omnivores. We eat plants. We eat salad and meat.
We eat decapods.
Oh, what's that?
I do not know.
Should have looked it up.
Two, I think.
10-footed, yeah.
Seagrasses and seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
Sponges.
Yep, sponges you would find in where your coral reefs are and stuff.
Mollusks, which I do not know.
Okay, so mollusks are all the things with shells. So any kind of seashell is a mollusk. Octopi and squid are also in the mollusk families. And even nudibranchs are in sea slugs.
And they also eat worms and fish.
Okay.
And the sea turtles, they change when they grow.
Change what?
They change what they eat when they grow. Like young ones are omnivores.
Yeah.
But when they grow up, they become only herbivores.
Huh. Which kind of makes sense when they're growing.
It changes their jaw.
What's that?
It changes their jaw.
Did you find out, does their jaw change because they're eating, or do they change what they're eating because their jaw changed? Okay, so probably God designed them, and it makes sense. When you're growing, you need more protein. Once you're full grown, you wouldn't need as much, so eating seaweed and stuff, that makes a lot of sense that they would change.
Yeah, and then the leatherbacks eat jellyfish.
Right.
And they help control their populations.
Sure, so you don't get an awful jellyfish bloom where you can't swim and nothing else can live.
Right.
Yeah, I knew that some of them ate jellyfish because they talk about when you've got helium balloons, when they get in the water, all the silvery stuff comes off and you're left with this clear bag thing that will look like a jellyfish to a sea turtle and they'll eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did know about that. Okay. So it's the leatherbacks that eat those.
Yeah, and the hawksbill, they mostly eat sponges.
And where do they live?
In the Caribbean.
Huh.
And also sea turtles, they breathe air.
Sure. Because they're like bones. All reptiles.
And so they have to go up to the surface to breathe.
Right.
And then how long they stay underwater depends on, like, what they're doing. Like, if they're looking for something to eat, they can stay down for, like, about 5 minutes to 40 minutes.
Okay.
But when they're sleeping or, like, not doing that much, they can stay down for 4 to 7 hours.
Whoa. Yeah. That's like a full nap without breathing. That's bizarre. Huh. Because, dolphins and whales have to come up a lot more often than that.
Yeah.
They must have a way of really slowing down.
Yeah. And also, during their first, like, 3 to 5 years, they float on in the pelagic zone. Which has lots of water columns.
Okay. So that's
and
a particular wall.
In the open ocean. Mm-hmm. And they float on seaweed.
Yeah, I know. We've got a book about a sea turtle that lives off the coast of Florida and goes out to the Sargasso Sea, and that's where it swims in the seaweed and stuff until it's grown. So the pelagic zone is just part of the water. If you think about it, have you ever been in a place where you went swimming and when your feet were down, it was a lot colder down there than it was near the surface?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just describing one of the zones. That would be the warm zone that makes it comfortable and you would have plenty of things to eat.
They also breathe really fast.
As in hyperventilate kind of thing?
No. What do you mean? They don't have to be up that long.
Okay. So they can snatch another lungful really quickly.
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense.
And also, they have really large lungs.
Mm-hmm. And, why is that good?
It's for avoiding, gases that would trap them.
Yeah. Okay. So do you know about that?
No.
Humans have to be extra careful. All right. So if you're a diver with a scuba tank and you've been breathing oxygen and you're way down, like 100 feet down, and you come up too quickly, you can get something called the bends, where you get air bubbles in your bloodstream. Because when you're way down deep, everything's pressing on you. There's a lot of pressure. And as you come up, the gas can expand, because that's what gas does. It can be squashed, and it can take up more room, depending on the pressure around it. So if you get gas bubbles in your veins and arteries and stuff, it can be very painful or even kill you, I believe. So I think that might be something similar for the turtles. Also, having large lungs would make them more... Have you ever been floating and get a full lung full of air and then let all the air out and see what happens to your body when you're floating in the water?
No.
I have. So if you've got a full lung full of air, it's much easier to float than if you blow all the air out. Even if you're on your back, suddenly you're having to kick harder to stay up. So having large lungs would allow them to stay buoyant longer if they didn't want to go deep diving. Now, what makes a sea turtle different from a regular land turtle?
Their flippers mm-hmm. are longer.
Well, do land turtles...
Mm-hmm. They have flippers instead of legs.
Right. They're designed to always be in the water. If you watch a documentary talking about the mom coming up to lay her clutch of eggs, because they still have to lay those on land, she's very slow and having to push along, and the little ones are having to slither along as fast as they can, trying to push. It's almost like watching a seal or something. They're obviously designed to spend all their lives out in the water rather than on land.
Yeah. Their shells aren't as mm-hmm. hard.
That makes sense. And also they're more, not aerodynamic, but water dynamic, where hydrodynamic. Yeah. So
they can move along mm-hmm. the water really fast.
Don't forget, you can find links to all the things we've talked about today by visiting the show notes page, creationsciencethenumber4kids.com/seaturtles or /072 for episode 72.
Be sure to let your friends know about this podcast and ministry. And to connect with all the rest of the things we do with the podcast, stop by the web address I got just for you, CS4KS. The initials of the show.com, and find out how to send us your own recording. Write us an Apple Podcast review, drop us a note, become a monthly supporter, and see the heart of why this ministry is so important. A big shout out to Violet and her daughter who emailed us. You can do it right from that page to say, "My daughter loves your podcasts. Oh, and wishes they were videos sometimes to see the kids too. We love everything you've done so far and are always looking for new episodes. Thank you." How would you like to do videos?
No.
Yeah, actually, doing videos is a lot more work because right now we have to hide to keep the 2-year-old from getting in the way. So videos are coming, but it might be a couple years yet. But thank you so much, Violet. And we also got an iTunes review from William Wise Photos, who has the williamwisephoto.com/creation-speaks and has beautiful animal pictures that he's done of a local animal shelter. Very sweet. And he said this about our podcast. Just came upon this podcast and going through entire back catalog. I have a wildlife biology degree and have been working with animals for 30 years. When I accepted Christ as Savior 24 years ago, my love of nature didn't wane. Instead of science disproving the Bible, I found the opposite. It takes greater faith to believe evolution. I have used nature presentations to preach the gospel. This podcast has been a great treasure of inspiration for my classes targeted to children. Thank you. Thank you so much, William Wise. That was so encouraging, and it was exciting to see your own ministry and that we can work together. So if you want to add your own review or send us an email, we would be thrilled to hear from you. And also, if this show has been a blessing to your family, would you consider supporting it financially? It's not free to host a podcast and website, and it takes a lot of my time. So we have a Patreon account where you can help us out, like Pastor Brian Bedworth and the Academy of Creation Apologetics for Moms do. Thank you. If a few more of our listeners help, even with just $1 a month, it will help cover the rest of our basic expenses, and anything above that will help us improve things for the future. So you can go to cs4ks.com to find out how you can get involved. All the jokes I could find had to do with shells. Like, what does a turtle use to call its friends?
A shell phone.
Right, exactly. So I'm afraid that's about as the best I can do. Dreadfully corny.
Well, this finishes up our show for today. Until next time, have fun treasuring our amazing universe and creator.
Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. Revelation 4:11.